The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Vision News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Tech Explorist, New Risk Factors for Blindness and Vision Impairment. From Merck, Removing Potential, I'm sorry, from, let's see, from Reuters.com, Merck is going to remove cancer-causing chemical from top diabetes drugs via Bloomberg News for Reuters. From WWLP.com in Massachusetts, can you use an expired at-home COVID-19 test? From The Hill, they posted that. American Diabetes Association has 2023 updates to their standards of care for diabetes. Vogue Business posts that Estee Lauder has an app that helps the visually impaired apply makeup. Tech Explorer, different website from the first one, a chance discovery may extend battery life in your devices. And MacRumors.com has features from the iOS 16.3 update for your iPhone. So let's get started. From TechExplorist.com, that's TechExplorist, researchers discover new risk factors for blindness, posted January 18th. Combining a map of gene regulatory sites with disease-associated loci has uncovered a new genetic risk factor of adult-onset macular degeneration, AMD, according to a new study published January 17th in the open-access journal PLOS Biology by Ran Elkan and Ruth Ashri Padan of Tel Aviv University, Israel, and colleagues. The finding advances the understanding of the leading cause of visual impairment in adults. AMD is caused by dysfunction in the retinal pigmented epithelium, RPE, a layer of tissue sandwiched between the photoreceptors that receive light and the choriocapillaris, which nourishes the retina. Because of the central importance of the RPE in AMD, the authors began by exploring a transcription factor, a protein that regulates specific genes, called LHX2, which, based on the team's analysis of mouse mutants, is central to RPE development. Knocking down LHX2 activity in RPE derived from human stem cells, they found that most affected genes were down-regulated, indicating that LHX2's role was likely that of a transcriptional activator, binding to regulatory sites on the genome to increase the activity of other genes. The authors found that one affected gene, called OTX2, collaborated with LHX2 to regulate many genes in the RPE. By mapping the genomic sites that OTX2 and LHX2 could bind to, they showed that 68% of those that bound LHX2 were also bound by OTX2, 864 sites in all, suggesting they likely work together to promote the activity of a large suite of genes involved in RPE development and function. A common method for finding genes that may contribute to disease is to perform a genome-wide association study, GWAS, which identifies genome sequence differences between individuals, termed single nucleotide polymorphisms, or SNPs, that co-occur with disease. Numerous such studies have previously been done in AMD. However, a GWAS by itself cannot uncover a causal mechanism. Here, the authors compared their LHX2/OTX2 binding data to GWAS data in order to home in on variations that affected the binding of the transcription factors and thus may contribute to disease. One such binding site was located within the promoter region of a gene called TRPM1, which had been previously linked to AMD, and found that the sequence variant at that site altered the binding strength of LHX2. The so-called C version bound it more strongly than the T version, and activity of the TRPM1 gene was higher when the C allele was present instead of the T allele. The results of the study indicate that the previously known increased risk of AMD from the variant identified in the GWAS was due to a reduction in the binding of the LHX2 transcription factor to the TRPM1 gene promoter, with a consequent reduction in the activity of this gene. The gene encodes a membrane ion channel, and previous studies have shown that mutations in the gene also cause visual impairment. Our study exemplifies how delineation of tissue-specific transcriptional regulators, their binding sites across the genome, and their downstream gene regulatory networks can provide insights into a complex disease's pathology, the authors said. Ashari Padan adds, the findings reveal a regulatory module consisting of LHX2 and OTX2 that controls the development and maintenance of the retinal pigmented epithelium, an important tissue of visual function. The genomic analyses further link the genomic regions bound by the two developmental factors to the genetics of the common multifactorial blinding disease, age-related macular degeneration, AMD. Journal reference, Cohen Gulkar M, that's Cohen-Gulkar, David A, Messica Gold N, Eschel M, Ovadia S, that's Ovadia, Zukbar N, that's Zuk-Bar, and others, 2023, the LHX2-OTX2 transcriptional regulatory module controls retinal pigmented epithelium differentiation and underlies genetic risk for age-related macular degeneration, published in PLOS-BIOL, Volume 21, Issue 1, Episode, or E-something, 3001924. The date of issue was October 1371/journal.pbio.3001924. From Reuters.com, R-E-U-T-E-R-S, Merck set to remove cancer-causing chemical from top diabetes drugs, Bloomberg News. January 17th, Merck & Company, MRK.N, has discovered how its blockbuster diabetes drugs have become contaminated with a potential carcinogen and believes it can resolve the problem by the end of the year, Bloomberg News reported on Tuesday. The company submitted a report to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, and other regulators after identifying the root cause for the presence of a nitrosamine called NTTP in certain batches of the drugs, according to the report, which cited a person familiar with the situation. NTTP belongs to the nitrosamine class of compounds, some of which are classified as probable or possible human carcinogens, based on laboratory tests, according to the FDA. The impurity arose mostly during storage, as well as during manufacturing, Bloomberg News said. Merck did not immediately respond to a Reuters request for comment. The FDA said in August certain samples of sitagliptin, a compound in Merck's diabetes drugs Januvia and Janumet, were contaminated with a possible carcinogen. For the 9 months ended in September, Januvia and Janumet posted sales of $2.25 billion and $1.35 billion, respectively. Reporting by Kushi Mandawara in Bengaluru, that's Kushi Mandowara, and Bengaluru is spelled Bengaluru. From WWLP.com, can you use an expired at-home COVID-19 test? By Heath Kalb, K-A-L-B, Nick DeGray, D-E-G-R-A-Y, posted January 16th. From Springfield, Massachusetts. Many of us have stored some extra at-home COVID-19 tests in case it's needed in the future. But what should be done if the testing kit surpasses its expiration date? According to the latest data released by the CDC, Massachusetts is currently at medium risk for COVID-19. And as the virus continues to live on, health officials are asking people to check their COVID testing kits. The FDA states if a COVID-19 testing kit has passed its expiration date, you should not use it for an accurate test. The parts and products used for the testing kits may break down over time, which could cause an invalid test result. While numbers are increasing throughout the Commonwealth, local residents told 22 News they're still concerned about the ever-changing virus. I definitely worry about it, said Lauren Huffnagel of Southampton. For people who are immunocompromised, I've had it myself, and I was lucky enough not to have terrible effects, but I do worry for people who aren't as lucky. Even as COVID cases continue to rise, both nationally and locally, people are continuing on with their lives while still being cautious. Although there is still some worry, especially after the holidays, it's not stopping people from going out on the town. It's definitely exciting to be back around people, said Kaylee Watson of Worthington. You still have people with masks, and to each their own, but yeah, it's nice to be back doing the normal things again. Some at-home COVID-19 testing kits may have extended the expiration date that you see on the label, so don't throw them away just yet. To see if your testing kit has an extended expiration date, check the FDA website. More than a dozen of the 30 authorized testing kits have an extended use time. If you are looking for a walk-in or drive-through COVID-19 testing center, you can check out the mass.gov website. As a side note, I know that Harris Teeter's tests have all expired that they're issuing in the Briar Creek location, and they said if you scan the QR code on the box, you can get the new expiration date, which is sometime in October, which is great. That's a 10-month extension. From VogueBusiness.com, Estee Lauder's new app helps visually impaired users apply makeup. The first of its kind, voice-enabled makeup assistant uses AR and AI to analyze the makeup on a user's face and suggests audio feedback on which areas need to be touched up or blended. Article by Maliha Shoaib, MALIHASHOAIB, posted January 11th. For people with visual impairments, applying makeup can be challenging, often relying on touch or other people for help. Now, Estee Lauder Companies, ELC, has launched an app to try to make that process easier. We spoke to individuals within the visual impairment community, and what became very clear was that they didn't have the independence they wanted when it came to using beauty and makeup products, and they had to rely on others, says Monica Rastogi, R-A-S-T-O-G-I, Executive Director, Corporate Cultural Relevancy and Inclusion and Diversity at ELC UK and Ireland. Powered by the company's augmented reality and artificial intelligence capabilities and developed using machine learning, the first-of-its-kind app called the Voice-Enabled Makeup Assistant, VMA, analyzes the makeup on a user's face to assess uniformity, boundaries of application, and coverage. Audio feedback will identify if a user's bronzer is foundation or if their lipstick is uneven, for example, and offer descriptions of the specific areas that could be touched up, waiting for the user to make adjustments before scanning again. The user can customize the speed of the voiceover and change the voice using the accessibility setting on their device. The VMA app is free to download and use and will detect any makeup, not just Estee Lauder products. The first iteration of the app is available in the UK via the Apple App Store and on esteelauder.co.uk. That's esteelauder.co.uk. With plans to roll it out to the Google Play Store and other markets such as North America in the first half of 2023. As the technology matures, ELC is hoping to expand the services and features, including specific looks to choose from, tutorials using ELC brand products, and in-app purchases. Estee Lauder is the first brand to roll out the app, with others to follow, each using the same technology but with different branding. Brand-specific features are planned for future editions. The app does not include any brand promotions or advertisements. Since this is a mobile app, the user can check their makeup on the go, whether they are just starting their routine or want to touch up throughout the day, says ELC Chief Information Officer Michael Smith, who was involved in the tech development process. The concept for the app was ideated and tested in partnership with Accenture's Design Studio. Our focus has been on usability, and as such, we have tried to make the app as intuitive as possible, so there is little to no learning curve, says Smith. This is the first version of the app, so we are excited to start gathering and incorporating the community's feedback and to deliver additional capabilities in the near future. ELC's IT team researched a range of variables when developing the app, from its name to the speed of the voice command and the tone of voice. Prior to the release of the app, it was tested by users of a variety of ethnicities and with different types of visual impairment. When we thought about voice selection, we thought the best would be a humanistic voice, something that sounds really realistic. When we actually did the research, what was most important was familiarity with a voice they were already using for a screen reader or Siri or an accessibility setting they had, Rostogi says. That's why speaking to members within the community was essential when developing the app, she says, to validate assumptions being made and correct them according to people's experiences and preferences. The beauty industry has been slow to adapt to include consumers with visual impairment or other disabilities, from advertising representation to product design to retail experience and attitudinal barriers. In the UK, more than 2 million people are living with sight loss, and of these, 340,000 people are registered as blind or partially sighted, according to the National Health Service. Globally, there are 43 million people living with blindness and 295 million living with moderate to severe visual impairment, according to the International Agency for the Prevention of Blindness's Vision Atlas. Over the past few years, brands have been introducing initiatives and adjusting products to help people with disabilities. In April 2021, Unilever unveiled a deodorant for people with visual impairment and upper limb disabilities, with easily graspable features for one-handed use, a larger roll-on applicator to reach more surface area, and easy-to-open packaging. In October 2021, Procter & Gamble announced a new technology, Navilens, which uses QR codes that can be scanned from a distance with a smartphone app to read out key product and shelf location information. Last week, L'Oreal launched a handheld motorized device to help people with disabilities apply lipstick. As an industry, we're in the early stages with disability inclusion. I think there is beginning to be this understanding that this is a very big, untapped opportunity, says Rostogi. The biggest crux is education. Education is where you dispel the myth that this consumer doesn't shop beauty, because that is not the case. With that comes the opportunity to educate yourself on the nuances of disability. For instance, vision loss includes the aging population, she says. So increasing the font on websites or in stores can vastly improve the experience for a lot of people. To research disability inclusion more broadly, ELC has worked with third-party agencies, including Interbrand, the Research Institute for Disabled Customers, as well as agencies that look at accessible store design. The company has also trained store staff and evaluated how to make its websites more accessible. The VMA launch is really one step in this bigger journey about disability inclusion. VMA is a fantastic app, but it speaks to one segment of the community, says Rostogi. Disability inclusion needs to be holistic and think about all the different touch points that an employee or customer might experience within their journey at work or in a store. This article has been updated with the example of the VMA app detecting unblended foundation. A previous version used the example of bronzer, which the app does not detect yet. Oops. Comments, questions, or feedback, email us at feedback@voguebusiness.com. From DiabetesSelfManagement.com, American Diabetes Association updates standards of care for 2023, article by Quinn Phillips, PHILLIPS, posted January 9th. The American Diabetes Association, ADA, has updated its official treatment guidelines, called the Standards of Care in Diabetes 2023, and published them in the journal Diabetes Care with notable changes seen in recommendations regarding weight loss, sleep, physical activity, and more. The ADA updates its treatment guidelines for diabetes and prediabetes every year, so the latest edition, like every edition of the Standards of Care, maintains most of what was included in the previous edition. But each and every year there are changes and additions based on the consensus among diabetes experts, who are tasked with updating various sections of the guidelines. All recommendations are supposed to be based on broad support and sufficient evidence, which means that events of the previous year, such as the introduction of a new drug or release of a single study, are unlikely to have an immediate impact on the guidelines. To get cutting-edge diabetes news, strategies for blood glucose management, nutrition tips, healthy recipes, and more, sign up for our free Diabetes Self-Management newsletter. a focus on health disparities and inequities. One notable change for 2023 is a focus on reducing health disparities and inequities, as noted in a press release from the ADA. This year's annual report provides necessary guidance that considers the role health inequities play in the development of diabetes, particularly for vulnerable communities and communities of color disproportionately impacted by the disease, said Chuck Henderson, the ADA's chief executive officer. This guidance will ensure healthcare teams, clinicians, and researchers treat the whole person. Accordingly, the press release notes, new guidelines state that social determinants of health, such as race, ethnicity, education level, income, and location of residence, should receive broad consideration in the design and delivery of care for people with diabetes or prediabetes. That means, for example, that limited access to nutritious foods or recreational opportunities should be considered when giving advice on nutrition or physical activity. Updates to recommendations on sleep and exercise. The new guidelines also offer new general guidance on sleep and physical activity. Healthcare providers should consider screening for sleep health in people with diabetes, which means checking for symptoms of sleep disorders, sleep disruptions due to diabetes or diabetes management needs, and worries about sleep. When indicated, healthcare providers should refer patients to a sleep medicine or behavioral health specialist, according to the guidelines. When it comes to physical activity, the guidelines state that most adults with type 1 or type 2 diabetes should get at least 150 minutes of moderate to vigorous aerobic activity, cardio, each week, spread over at least 3 days, with no more than 2 consecutive days without activity. Shorter durations of activity may be enough, though, for younger and more physically fit individuals. Updates to recommendations on weight loss. In the area of weight loss, the new guidelines endorse a variety of approaches for different situations, including nutrition interventions, physical activity, behavioral therapy, pharmaceuticals, and bariatric weight loss surgery, also sometimes called metabolic surgery in the context of diabetes. While the clinical benefits of weight loss for people with obesity start at losing 3% to 5% of body weight, greater weight loss, as much as 15% of body weight, is now a real possibility due to newer prescription drugs, the guidelines note. Bariatric surgery may also lead to a large degree of weight loss, but it carries greater risks than weight loss drugs do. Addition of subject matter experts. Also new to the development of this year's guidelines was the addition of certain subject matter experts to the committees that developed guidelines on neuropathy, retinopathy, foot care, and non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, NAFLD. Two representatives of the American College of Cardiology, ACC, also participated in creating the guidelines on cardiovascular disease and risk management. Want to learn more diabetes basics? Read Welcome to Diabetes for Type 2, Type 1 Diabetes Questions and Answers for Type 1, and Gestational Diabetes, Are You at Risk for Gestational Diabetes? From Tech Explorer, which is different from the first website, TechExplorer.com. Chance Discovery could extend battery life by replacing tape that causes self-discharge. Article by Allison Auld, AULD, from Dalhousie University. It happens far too often. You plug your laptop in and walk away, only to return hours or days later to find it has lost some of its charge despite sitting idle and unused. The phenomenon called self-discharge has frustrated users and industry alike and puzzled manufacturers trying to determine why lithium-ion battery cells tend to lose some of their charge over time. A researcher at Dalhousie has identified a surprisingly common culprit that, if replaced, could address an enduring problem for the industry. In commercial battery cells, there is tape, like scotch tape, that holds the electrodes together, and there is a chemical decomposition of this tape, which creates a molecule that leads to the self-discharge, says Michael Metzger, M-E-T-Z-G-E-R, an assistant professor and the Hertzberg Dahn Chair and in the Department of Physics and Atmospheric Science. In our laboratory, we do mainly highly complex experiments to improve batteries. But this time, we discovered a very simple thing. It's a very simple thing. It is in every plastic bottle, and no one would have thought that this has such a huge impact on how the lithium-ion cells degrade. an unexpected discovery. Dr. Metzger and his colleagues wanted to understand why lithium-ion battery cells self-discharge. As part of their research, they opened several cells after exposing them to different temperatures. They were stunned to see that the electrolyte solution in the cell was bright red, something they had never seen before. They then began exploring the cause, placing cells with common electrolyte solution into ovens at four different temperatures. One at 25 degrees centigrade remained clear, while samples at 55 degrees centigrade was light brown, and the highest ones at 70 degrees centigrade was blood red. They did a chemical analysis and looked at the chemical composition of the electrolyte. That's when they found that the polyethylene terephthalate, or PET, in the tape decomposes and creates the molecule that leads to the self-discharge. The molecule is called a redox shuttle because it can travel to the positive side of the electrode, then to the negative side, and then back to the positive side. So it shuttles between the electrodes, and that creates the self-discharge, just like lithium is supposed to do. The problem is that the shuttle molecule is doing it all the time, in the background, even when no lithium is supposed to move, when the battery's just sitting there. It's just something we never expected, because no one looks at these inactive components, these tapes and plastic foils in the battery cell, but it really needs to be considered if you want to limit side reactions in the battery cell, he says, of the tape made from PET, a strong, lightweight plastic used widely in packaging and pop bottles. Commercially relevant. The researchers outlined their findings in two new papers and are catching the attention of industrial heavyweights seeking ways to improve their battery's performance. Both papers are published in the Journal of the Electrochemical Society. Dr. Metzger recently visited a company in the States that relies on dependable, long-lasting batteries and was asked about the tape issue after hearing about Dr. Metzger's novel discovery. The self-discharge is a super important metric for them, says Dr. Metzger. One of the engineers said, I heard you guys found out something's wrong with PET tape. So I explained to him that it's causing this self-discharge and asked him, what are you using in your cells? He said, PET tape. The information could lead to a fix that might involve replacing the PET tape with a more stable material that won't degrade. It's a commercially relevant discovery. It's a small thing, but it can definitely help improve battery cells, he says. For more information, Sebastian Buchele, B-U-U-M-L-A-U-T-C-H-E-L-E, et al., Reversible Self-Discharge of LFP/Graphite and NMC811/Graphite Cells Originating from Redox Shuttle Generation, published in the Journal of the Electrochemical Society, 2023. Date of issue, 10.1149/1945-7111/ACB10C. And another citation that's extremely similar. I don't have time to read the article from MacRumors.com about Here's What's New in iOS 16.3 for Your iPhone So Far by Joe Rossignol, R-O-S-S-I-G-N-O-L, published Friday the 13th. I will try to get through the intro. Apple released the second beta of iOS 16.3 earlier this week, and so far only one new feature and two other minor changes have been discovered in the software update. I've run out of time for this week's episode of Vision News. Be sure to listen next week. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Doris Hyde reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Vision News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.